This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education, what's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. I trust you're enjoying this sunshiny day. We're already thinking about, however, a return to school, back to school. The provincial government, as we all know, this week released its plan for return to class in the K-12 system in September. It takes into account three separate scenarios and depends heavily on what the COVID situation will be like in the weeks and months ahead as everyone braces for that second wave everyone is talking about. The details will be left to the school boards, of course, and individual schools. And here to discuss the impact on families are two local working moms who we've spoke with before. They are Rhonda McMeekin. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello.
And Jane Bannister. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Linda.
So, Jane, I'll start with you because I know you have a couple of kids who are in school these days, or school-age children, I should say. How has the homeschooling been going?
We relied pretty heavily on the board saying that there wasn't going to be any marks being evaluated. So, you know, we just kind of followed the kids' interests. Like, for instance, my daughter in grade 7 is in a school where they have semesterized courses. So she had just started a couple of courses and had only had a couple weeks in them. And so for her, that was art or music. So we actually kind of said, you know, that's what you didn't get the chance to do earlier in the year. So why not check out what the music teacher's posting and try to get some of that stuff done? And for the other two, we just had a lot of fun and did a lot of exploring and also did some of the activities that their teachers were posting.
No doubt there's lots of learning opportunities, and I've been trying to exercise that myself in my household, but those down to detail kind of academic type of activities have sort of gone by the wayside. Have you found that, Rhonda?
Absolutely. I mean, I have a six-year-old now. Finnegan just turned six, and he just finished up his last year of kindergarten, and another child who's three. So, I mean, to get a five-year-old at the time to sit down and actually focus on pure academics, I mean, it's impossible, especially when you have two parents that are working in the home as well. So, like Jane, we kind of just followed his interest to try to give him the best learning opportunities that we could. We gave him the opportunity to do some of the activities that his wonderful teacher sent out to us. But, you know, it was a struggle just to kind of keep him engaged in that and try to keep the household going and our jobs at the same time.
As we all know, school is not just about learning or academics. It's also about the structure of the day, socializing, interacting with others, those kinds of things. Jane, have you noticed an impact from not being in school for so long?
Yeah, absolutely. Even now that playgrounds are open and we're able to go out again, we still, all of us, kids and adults alike, feel a little bit uncomfortable being that close to people. We're just not used to it anymore. So it's kind of like yesterday we went down to Bannerman Park and definitely got a little bit overwhelmed. And it was sort of like, okay, now we've had our playtime and now we're going to go for a walk, and went over on the Government House grounds. And just, it felt more comfortable at that point just to be by ourselves, which is a really weird state to be in.
It is indeed. Rhonda, your little fella, as you indicated, only just started school, so he's not really quite into the whole rhythm of it yet. But have you noticed an impact from not being in school?
Definitely. Both of my kids, because they've both been home, and my littlest guy hasn't been in daycare. He just started back last week, and I can definitely notice some social regression with the both of them. I mean, 16 weeks is a lifetime to a small kid, and to be, you know, segregated from kids their own age and only having each other to play with. You know, my oldest guy is really social. He was so excited to get into day camp this week, and he's really been thriving, and I've noticed a huge difference just in his personality in the last 3 days. ways, you know, getting to be around kids his own age again and getting to interact with them. But my youngest little guy, I mean, he's always been a mommy's boy, but, you know, the separation anxiety now that he's feeling going back to daycare and, you know, even just, you know, he's three, potty training, he's struggling with that at daycare now, which he never did. Their social development has really been hindered by all of this.
Is it a worry to you, Rhonda?
What parent wouldn't be worried at this point? I mean, they're adaptable and they seem to, you know, move with the change really well for the most part. But, you know, I can't help but wonder what it is that they're missing and how much this is going to set them back in September. You know, how hard is grade one going to be for Finnegan now that he's been out of school since February? Really, we took a family vacation in February and got back and the whole world kind of fell apart from there. So I mean, he's been out of school since February. How is he going to get back into that learning environment in such a structured place where he's not used to that anymore? It's harsh.
Jane, Rhonda mentioned that, you know, this time elapsing has been like a lifetime for a lot of children, and you have your children are a little bit older than that. My son has moved to the online world. It was great for socializing while we were sticking around at home, but even now that he's able to interact and play with a couple of his friends, he's still relying very heavily, a little too heavily in mom's opinion, on online interactions. Are you finding the same thing?
Yeah, definitely. It's still a lot easier in some ways and a lot more comfortable now that everybody got used to this not being allowed to be with people. So I'm hoping now we're going to get more and more sun, that cold weather from the last few days is done, and we can work on more outside things because my job's flexible enough that I'll be able to take some afternoons and move to get everybody outside and hopefully do some meetups like that. But I feel, especially for my oldest, because I was thinking recently, this was supposed to be the summer where she's 13 and she's supposed to be getting a lot more freedoms and getting a lot more chances to go out around with her friends and not be supervised like her younger siblings. And unfortunately, not that she needs the direct supervision, but she's also not, you know, they're not able to go for a walk and go to the store and do this and that and the other thing like they would have normally.
I've noticed that, and I keep repeating this to you, I don't know if you find the same, but I keep saying to my son, you know, Newfoundland only gets so much good weather. You need to be outside. Do you find, Rhonda, that you find yourself saying those kinds of things?
Definitely. You know, my two have been very heavily reliant on the iPads, since they've been home. Like I said, we have full-time jobs. Both parents have full-time jobs as well. So sometimes it's just, you know, no judgment, man. Like, it's just easier to give them the iPad sometimes when you have to go on a Zoom call for a little while. And now it's kind of a balance between they've become technologically addicted and there's that certain element of fear too. I mean, we've spent the last 3.5 months telling them, you know, there's this virus out there. You have to be careful. You have to stay away from people. And now all of a sudden we're trying to get them back outside and they're like, but what about this virus? It's trying to explain to them, you know, the risk levels and whatnot. And their little minds just can't grasp that. So it's finding that delicate balance of trying to explain to them where we are in the world right now.
Jane, my little fella keeps saying the stupid COVID. If it wasn't for the stupid COVID, I'd be able to do this or I'd be able to do that. Do you find that your kids, you know, struggling to understand that?
We've talked about it a bit. I think they're understanding it, but it is really, yeah, it's hard to go out or go for a walk and run into one of their friends in the neighborhood and have them feel like, you know, they can't stand too close to them or they can't really talk to them. Like, maybe one of the kids is hiding behind me. It's like, that's sad. Yeah, we're going to have, anxiety in children was already something that schools are noticing more of and is becoming on the rise. And I think that this is definitely not going to help that situation.
We'll talk about government's back-to-school plan in a moment, but you raise an important point there, Jane. And do you think the schools will be prepared to deal with that kind of impact? Because, you know, this has really had an effect on children.
Yeah, they're going to have to really be aware that most kids are going to have had some changes in their lives and mentally are going to find it hard to deal with going back to school and getting back to normal and what normal is.
Rhonda, you find yourself having to manage those fears?
Absolutely. And I mean, I worry about the school environment that they're going back to. I mean, we've heard about guidance counselor shortages in school. We hear that the recommendation has been, you know, one guidance counselor to 250 students. And the reality is 1 to 500. And now with all of these new issues that we're anticipating, you know, the anxiety issues kids are going to have, the social regressions, things like that, are they going to be prepared? Is the workload going to be too great on the teachers, on the school staff? It's concerning.
And we'll talk about your response to government's back-to-school plan now in a moment. My guests today are Rhonda McMeekin. I'm sorry, Rhonda. Rhonda McMeekin.
Okay.
It's not always easy to say.
No.
And Jane Bannister. They're two local working moms with kids in the system, and we'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guests today are Rhonda McMeekin and Jane Bannister. We've had them on the show before talking about how COVID has impacted their families and the family dynamic, if you will. But the provincial government this week issued its back-to-school plan. Some people calling it a bit vague, lacking in detail. Jane, what do you think about it?
Well, I think that it had to be really overarching because it's going now to the two school districts and they have better knowledge of the schools, and then it's going to the schools themselves because it's going to have to be that a specific plan for the schools that our kids attend is going to have to come from the people that are in the school all the time. So looking to the teachers and the school admin to coming up with some more details. I'm really looking forward to hearing more details, but I guess it's going to have to come more from the school family level.
Rhonda, what did you think?
You know, I'm happy that there's a definite focus on getting the kids back to class. But I have some real concerns over, I guess, like you said, the vagueness of it and what it's going to do to the workload of the school staff and teachers. You look at something like, well, I mean, for example, we go back and everything is as it is, but you look at the fit to play model where students have to be home, even if they have the sniffles. And now the teacher is responsible for delivering the curriculum in the classroom and online at the same time. And their responsibilities are going to be increased when it comes to duty and sanitation of the classroom and making sure kids are washing their hands. I mean, it's a huge increase in their workload. And I don't know if much consideration has been given to that.
And indeed, when you think about youngsters, I mean, they always have something coming out of them at some point. Realistically, will we see many kids in class, Jane?
You know, like I've talked to quite a few of fellow parents who are saying, you know, I'm worried that my kids are going to be out from November to April because it seems like they always have a runny nose for all those cold months. So, you know, people have concerns.
Rhonda, a lot of us with school-aged children have older people in our lives, people who might be sick or immunocompromised. Do you think parents will be sending their kids back to school with that in mind?
There are definitely some families who aren't going to be able to send their kids back to school in these circumstances. I mean, you know, you've got high-risk family members, you have high-risk children that simply can't take the chance of being around that many people in the world's current circumstances. And how is that going to work? You know, what does that mean for working families who have two parents that now have to be out of the household to work, but you have a child who has to be home that needs to be homeschooled? You know, what's that scenario look like? What about the families that just aren't comfortable sending their kids back to school in an environment like that? What kind of supports are there going to be for them?
Are there concerns that kids will drop off the radar, Jane? Is that something you've contemplated?
I would really hope that that wouldn't happen. I know that I've heard parents that are contemplating officially homeschooling, so that would be making their own curriculum, so not just following what comes out from the board in their online stuff, but actually taking on the role of being a homeschooling parent. And for those families, they have to be registered with the school and report to the school on a regular basis. So there is that framework that's been in place for quite a long time. So hopefully, you know, having the kids on the register means, and I guess like Rhonda said, it's another job for teachers and admin to be checking on all the families that are on the register.
How difficult is it planning, the months ahead, Jane?
I've already told my manager that I'm not sure what I'm going to be available to do outside of the home in September, because it really, once we're going to have to see what the kids are actually up to. I'm hoping that, because I'm going to have a primary kid and an elementary kid, I'm hoping that if they do have to do this reduced attendance, so attending one day and then not the next or something like that, I hope they're on the same schedule, because that would make planning so much easier. So knowing these details is going to be really helpful, but when are we going to be able to know them? Maybe not till quite a bit later, towards the start of the year.
How important, Rhonda, is it for employers to be flexible and continue to be flexible?
I mean, I'm so lucky that I have such a great employer that, you know, really understands the situation that I'm in right now. But I mean, some people aren't as lucky. Some people are, you know, have unstable employment. Some people don't have sick leave. What does that look like? Is the province going to implement some sort of special leave for parents who have to care for kids when they're unable to attend school because of the new regulations that are? I have way more questions than I have answers for you today, Linda. I mean, it's just, there's so much vagueness in this plan. Even if we had some idea of what, you know, low risk meant, you know, they say that, you know, option number one is when there's low risk for infection. But what does low risk mean? Is that tied to one of the alert levels? Is it tied to the number of cases in the geographic area? You know, there's just no way to make a plan right now. And if I can't make a plan for my kids, I can't give a plan to my employer. And, you know, what does that mean for my income? And what, you know, if I can't go to work, I don't have money to put into the economy. I mean, it's an endless cycle. And without the ability to plan for that, nobody can plan for what the future holds right now.
Or future employment, for that matter. I mean, it's one thing for an employer to be flexible with being able to work from home, but just not all businesses can do that, can make those accommodations. So there must be some real fears out there for people who don't have that flexibility.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, it's important when we're discussing this to realize that this unfairly and inequitably affects women more than anything else. And, you know, you have to put that gendered lens on things, which I think has really been lacking in government planning as well, to be quite honest. But, you know, it's going to make it so much harder for women in particular to re-enter the workforce after we surpass this stage in world history. You know, what's that going to look like?
Does that concern you as well, Jane?
Yeah, I mean, it's already established that women that take time off for taking care of their children in their younger years do find it harder to re-enter the workplace and never make the same amount of money that they would have if they didn't have to have a break. It's definitely going to make for a different situation for parents that don't have the option to have a flexible work.
The daycares are back open. What's been your experience, or have you any experience with that process, Rhonda?
Yeah, my youngest son started back at daycare last week, and I have to say it's been phenomenal. There's lots of changes that have happened, but the daycare that we use, they've been great in communicating to us parents, what the new regulations are, what their expectations are, how they're maintaining, you know, all of the health and safety procedures throughout the day. And it's been fabulous for my son. I'm so glad that he's back. But that's, how long is that going to last at this point? But they've been absolutely fabulous with their communications and their adherence to the public health measures, for sure.
So what kind of changes have you noticed?
Well, we have to do the fit for play questionnaire every morning. So that's, you know, confirming that we haven't been in touch with anybody who's been diagnosed with COVID. We haven't been outside the province, you know, there's no symptoms, all that sort of thing. Before, we'd be able to bring our son right into his classroom and, you know, get him set for the day, say our goodbyes and whatnot. Now we have to sit in the parking lot, call, answer our questionnaire and kind of just drop him at the door. Can't go in the afternoons to pick him up. He has to be, you know, we call again. We're here to pick him up. They send him out the door with all of his things and on the way. There's no parents allowed in the classrooms. The kids don't get to intermingle between age groups anymore. And, you know, I know they're having some difficulties in juggling staff time to make sure that staff aren't moving between rooms either. So the kids are interacting with the same staff members all throughout the day to kind of limit, again, the contact tracing and whatnot that would have to happen in the event of, you know, something awful happening. So they've been so good at communicating the process to everybody, and it's really run quite smoothly. I have to, you know, give a shout out to all those ECEs that are just doing phenomenal work in these unfortunate circumstances.
Jane, have you had any experience with getting your kids back in daycare or day programs, camps, anything like that, recreational activities?
You know, we're lucky enough in the summer we don't have a childcare need, as my husband's a teacher, so he's home with them. And that I've been thinking about just being able to be out and social with kids, whether or not I should look at some sort of activity, especially for the younger ones. But it's really hard both to mentally take the step of going, wow, do we need to increase our risk that way? And also, when I think about the fact that there's families that need this for childcare, so should I be taking spots when I know it's a situation that spots are limited? Like looking at the wait list that I heard about for the St. John City day camps and thinking, well, maybe I need to rethink, you know, what kind of activities we need to take part in.
You raise an excellent point, Jane, because I've struggled with that myself. I was worried about the childcare options that were available in my situation and decided not to put my son back into daycare, even though it was available. But because I'm working from home, I was afraid I was taking it away from someone who really needed it. So you find yourself thinking well beyond the needs of your own immediate family.
Yeah, that was where I found myself when I was looking at some of the different activities that were coming out, thinking, you know, they might, in past summers, we would have picked a week here and there for somebody to do a specialized activity that they enjoy, like doing a clay camp or doing a coding camp or one of the bricks for kids or something. A lot of that stuff isn't running. So what is running? Yeah, I kind of feel like it's not 100% necessary for us this year, so we'll take a pass on it.
And some pretty long wait lists for a lot of programs. Rhonda, I know you've had some experience with that. I'll ask you about that right after this. My guests today, Rhonda McMeekin and Jane Bannister, we're talking about back-to-school recreational activities, the impacts on family now that we're in alert level 2 and things are starting to open up a little bit, but with this looming thought of another surge coming our way. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guests today are Rhonda McMeekin and Jane Bannister. They're two local moms who are working from home and have kids in tow. And it's been an interesting and challenging past few months for families all across Canada, for that matter. Rhonda, any luck getting your children involved in some day programs or camps this summer?
Yeah, so I got my oldest in the city camp in Mount Pearl, and he is loving life. So happy to be back with his friends. And, you know, going back to what yourself and Jane said about, you know, working from home and trying to make the decision about, you know, whether you're going to send them into care or whether you're going to keep them home. And I have to tell you, that is something I absolutely agonized over, because I'm working from home because my employer deems it safer for me to be home and working. And I'm choosing to send my son out into the world to, you know, be with his peers and whatnot. And, you know, I really had to make that choice on, you know, where was I going to make the choice to, you know, am I going to look after his mental health and realize that, you know, he needs to be out and with people in order to thrive and socially develop and whatnot? Or am I going to keep him home and keep him safe from this virus, but likely see him regress? And, you know, for my own mental health as well, it's been really tough to work full time and try to parent full time and try to teach, you know, do homeschooling with them. And for me, I mean, despite the fact that I'm working home, I thought it was better for his overall health to go into a program for the summer because he really needs that social interaction. So I've been really lucky to get him into that program for the majority of the summer. And like I said, he started on Monday. He is loving life. And both of my kids have also signed up for baseball. So they're loving that as well. And I think that's a little bit more low risk when you look at, you know, in terms of risky behaviors and whatnot. It's not, you know, downtown on George Street. It's playing baseball. So I feel relatively comfortable with that as well. And, you know, again, really happy with all the measures that they've taken to keep the kids safe. But for me, you know, it was a personal choice. So that was my decision. But I know that a lot of people have really agonized over that as well. And people who need the care and can't get it, you know, it's awful because you're put in a really difficult situation. And who I really feel for, especially, is those single parents who are struggling with all of this.
Absolutely. And I mean, parenting, as we all know, is you just go on gut instinct most days. There's no, book that you can get the right answers for, and you worry about the decisions you're making today. What kind of an impact will it have a couple weeks down the road, a couple years, decades down the road? Jane, do you find that, you know, every decision you're making now is just so fraught with all of these worries?
Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, not that you're right. The problem is that there wasn't one book. The problem is there's too many books about parenting. It's way too hard to use that to decide anything. But yeah, absolutely. We're being forced to make decisions in a situation now that have never been exposed to. We don't have any background in how to make a good decision right now. So really, yeah, we're going on our instinct and I guess our sense of what's best for our family and what's best for our community, and hoping for the best for everybody, and that everyone's going to come out of this feeling, I don't know, secure and reassured at some point when this finally all is passed.
I find my son is providing me with the answers I need. I'll say, are you comfortable doing this? And he'll either say yes or no, and there my decision is made. Do you find the same thing, Rhonda?
I wish my kids were kind of that self-aware where they could do that. But, I mean, they're still so young and, you know, they have this fear that, you know, very rightly I have instilled in them that, you know, we need to be careful. We need to stay away from people. There's this virus. And, you know, so they're apprehensive to kind of make some of these decisions, and rightfully so. And at the same time, you know, I'm trying to keep them safe and pushing them out the door at the same time. And it's confusing to them. It's confusing to me. So, you know, I kind of have to take on that role and make the best decision possible that I can, given the information that's before me. You know, I'm trying my best to listen to what the public health officials have to say. They're doing a fantastic job, but there's just so much contradictory information out there. It's difficult.
Is that part of the problem, Jane? Do you find yourself trying to stay on top of the very latest good information?
You know, that's for sure, right? Like, going through your Facebook feed, you'll see article after article from different news sources. And, like, the kids in school are starting to learn about being aware of checking their facts and going for good sources. You know, it's another moment for adults to learn that lesson, too. But every day there's something different about transmission and something different about who's higher at risk and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, most of us don't have the background in medicine to be able to fully comprehend the implications of some of the research that's happening, but we're still able to go and read about it anyway. So it definitely makes educated decision-making a challenge.
It worries me personally, as someone who's in the news business, that there is an awful lot of really specious information that's out there. You got to hope that people are able to filter through that adequately. Jane, do you find that, having done some news reporting yourself?
Yeah, I miss doing some of the news reporting myself. Yeah, I'm teaching the kids about what to look for and what's your sources and things like that. And a little bit of how videos on YouTube probably aren't the sources, depending on where they're coming from.
Well, indeed, Rhonda, your children are a little bit younger, but do you find that that's something you're going to have to navigate?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, even now, they're, like you said, they're younger, but, you know, they're into the YouTube and this stuff like that, and trying to explain to them that, you know, not everything they hear is factual, and, you know, you've got to make up your own mind. But at the same time, you know, I'm struggling with the same thing, you know, trying to find those reliable news sources, and even listening to our own public health officials. I mean, just take, for example, going back to the Department of Education plan. You know, they're saying we have to, you know, physical distancing is important, but not as important as, you know, keeping kids active and engaged and whatnot. But are we putting the teachers at risk by not enforcing physical distancing when we're saying that that's what's important? So there seems to be so much contradictory information, even coming from our own officials. It's hard to know what's right and wrong.
The physical distancing part of heading back to school, does that trouble you, Jane?
Well, you know, now that when I saw that, about how they were saying that a 1 meter distance might be what's going to be able to be accomplished, and I can't remember, of course, now where I did see this information, but it was a collection of different countries around the world and how they actually, the 2 meter, 6 foot standard that we've been going by actually isn't the world standard. So there's other places that have been talking about how a meter is adequate, or 1.5 meters. So I kind of thought that was interesting to see that number show up again, since I had seen it in a different context about social distancing in other places.
It's one thing in the classroom, of course, but it's a whole other thing in the hallways and on buses. Are you any clearer on how that's going to work, Jane?
Yeah, the buses are kind of what we're thinking about the most. So for this September, I'm going to just have one out of the three kids on the bus. I guess for our normal routine should be on the bus. We'll see now what we're going to decide to do, because I'll have to be driving the younger two. We're out of our catchment area to do French immersion, but we do have to drive them to school anyway. So is this going to be something I can manage in the morning to drop all three of them off rather than just dropping two of them off? Do I want to avoid the bus at certain levels? Like, is this something that we're going to be, I know they're kind of encouraging that if parents can drive their kids that would normally take the bus, then maybe they should, because then that'll make the bus less busy. Yeah, that's another thing to think about.
So many impacts on our lives, you know, trying to navigate all of this. Rhonda, you'll have the last word. We have a little less than a minute left, but are these, as Jane pointed out, some of the things that worry you, especially when it comes to physical distancing?
Absolutely. You know, my son is in a school that has 700 kids from K to 3. There are 10 classes of kindergarten. I mean, physical distancing is a joke in that kind of scenario. And you have to wonder, you know, what are they going to be able to do with the space given, and with the teacher allocations and with the staff allocations? You know, how can they accommodate this plan that they've laid out when we simply don't have the human resources and the physical resources to make it happen?
Rhonda McMeekin and Jane Bannister, I thank you both for joining me on the show today. Your insight and experiences are always interesting. I love hearing from ordinary people. I hate to call you ordinary. You know what I'm trying to say. But thank you both for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Linda.
And our show tomorrow will be focused on a growing controversy that's building within the Liberal Party of Newfoundland and Labrador. We'll be speaking with political scientist Kelly Bladuc about what's going on coming up tomorrow, so stay tuned for that.